WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noam
on 77 WABC.
That is me, 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Friday, March 22nd. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine today, cool, high 44. So it's going to be a nice day, but on the cooler side. But then Saturday is just going to be a mess. We will see a lot of rain Saturday, 2 to 3 inches before the storm moves out. So expect some flooding in places where flooding normally happens and probably in some places where it does not normally happen. And then on Sunday, it is sun and clouds, high 48. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it's 26 and clear in Pomona up in Rockland County, 25 and clear in Hightstown down in New Jersey. And it is 28 and clear outside our Midtown studio. So much to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour, sit in friends in the morning. I was telling Frank about this story, if you were listening to the other side of midnight, about a half hour ago, that notorious landlord, the one that got Slumlord of the Year here in New York City for those two buildings that are disasters up in Washington Heights. So he turned himself in last night. The landlord, Daniel Oheb Shalom, a judge had put out a warrant for him because he had so many violations in these two buildings. I mean, just disaster, these two buildings, the apartment buildings up on 170th Street. And so Oheb Shalom lives out in California, and apparently the sheriffs there made some sort of arrangement for him to turn himself in. So now he's going to be brought back to New York. He may be here already. We couldn't get confirmation. And he's going to be thrown behind bars at Rikers Island. And he can get out early, apparently, if he starts to make some of the repairs that he has not made and get through some of these violations that have been thrown at him. That, as you'll remember, his tenants have complained bitterly about the fact that they're paying for these apartments, and it's just nightmares. There's trash all over the place. There's rats. There's ceilings that are coming apart.
Suddenly, I heard him scream, and when I went into the room, the ceiling had collapsed over him. And thankfully, you know, it wasn't a major injury, but, I mean, it hit his head.
Yeah, so the Department of Housing Preservation and Development, the first to sue Oheb Shalom for needed repairs back in 2021. So this is the second year in a row that he's been picked by New York City as the worst landlord in New York City. So he turned himself in yesterday after 2 weeks of past this arrest warrant that was issued from a bench by a judge who said he's had enough of him not fixing all the things that he needed to fix. They gave him, I said 30 days. It's actually 60 days at Rikers Island. Again, they told him that he could potentially get out of Rikers Island if they see that he starts the process of fixing what's wrong. And tenants in these two buildings up in Washington Heights say, just, you know, the list is endless of all the horrible things in them.
They would withdraw the rent straight out of our bank account every month. But then we get no heat for 5 days every week. 3 days with heat, the rest of the time no heat, no hot water. You need to pay for what you did. So you can't keep the building. Give it to us.
Yeah, so a lot of questions, of course. Maybe some of these people have rent-controlled apartments. He's not making a lot of money off this building anymore. That could be the case. Maybe he has the money, doesn't have the money to make the repairs. Maybe it's time for him to sell these buildings to somebody who will make the repairs. But in the meantime, Daniel Oheb Shalom is going to be, if he's not already, behind bars at Rikers Island. All right, it didn't end well for the local basketball teams in the NCAA tournament. We had hoped we'd have a lot more representation during March Madness, but it didn't happen that way. And unfortunately, some of the lesser teams were the ones locally that made the tournament. You had St. Peter's, who had that incredible run. You remember in 2022 where they knocked off number 2 Kentucky at the time, and then they made it all the way to the Elite Eight, this tiny little college in Jersey City. So the hope was maybe they could do that again here in 2024, making the tournament. They took on number 2 Tennessee. And, I mean, this was a rout like no other kind of rout. They lost 83-49 yesterday. Here is their coach, Bashir Mason, after the game.
You know, one game for us, one loss, you know, here on this stage. Sucks, but I'm confident in my guys and, you know, the season that we had. And, I feel great about us being back here.
So, yes, so there was one player, or maybe two, who were on that run in 2022, that magical run where they made it to the Elite Eight and played in Philadelphia, and it was such a huge game. In Jersey City, of course, everybody excited. You had the alumni at this small school beyond excited. So they asked him, they said, did you think maybe you could make another run like this? And Latrell Reed said after the game, he realized like how big it was 2 years ago that they were able to beat so many great teams, because this Tennessee team they lost to was unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. Like Coach said, Tennessee's really good. But to make it back here after what we did was amazing. And I'm just proud of this group. And I wouldn't rather do it with another group, so... For sure, it's definitely amazing. It goes to show how amazing that run was. And I know everybody were expecting something like that again, but it just goes to show how crazy this tournament is.
Yeah, so look, he had that moment, and well, I guess he won't have it again. I think he's a senior. And then our other representative in the March Madness NCAA tourney was this another small college, Wagner, out on Staten Island's first time they'd ever made it to the tourney. They took on UNC in North Carolina yesterday. It did not go well for them either. They lost 90-62. A lot of fans, Wagner fans, getting together last night to watch the game. I should say it was yesterday.
We played our hardest. At the end of the day, we're versus the number one seed. We only have seven players, so we have to do a lot more than we were expected. But we gave it all our shot. That's it.
Yeah, he was a little hard to understand, but what he was saying was they only took seven players to North Carolina because that's all they had. That's as deep as their bench went. So you need five players if you don't follow basketball. And they had only two extras because they had so many injuries during the course of the season. So when you take on a team like North Carolina that's so good, you can't do that with just seven players.
I think the team played really well. They put up a good effort against the number one team, and they got the experience of being in the Big Ten.
WABC News Time 5:09. Let's go over to New Jersey. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez says he will not be running for re-election as a Democrat ahead of this primary filing on Monday. He released a 9-minute video yesterday where he teased that he would seek re-election if he's exonerated in his federal bribery charges, which might be a big if, that he would run as an independent Democrat, which could potentially, of course, screw things up for the Democrats come November if they have their own Democrat running, and then they have Bob Menendez running. Here he was yesterday.
I will not file for the Democratic primary this June. I am hopeful that my exoneration will take place this summer and allow me to pursue my candidacy as an independent Democrat in the general election. This would allow me the time to not only remind New Jerseyans of how I've succeeded in being your champion, but how we will secure our financial futures.
Menendez says he's disappointed at what he called the false accusations against him, asked New Jerseyans to withhold judgment until justice takes place. Prosecutors say the senator conspired with his wife, another person, to act as an agent of Egypt in exchange for bribe payment, and it included gold bars, all kinds of cash found in his house. Both he and his wife have pled not guilty in the case. Senator Menendez says those accusations that he'll be exonerated. Now, he's gone through a trial once, and he got off then. Not clear if that'll happen again. Seems like they have a lot more evidence the second time around. And, of course, the big question is, why would he run as an independent and potentially screw it over for the Democrats, who have not lost a Senate seat in New Jersey since the 1970s. And I thought Frank Morano was crazy when he floated this idea yesterday, but I think he might be right about this. He thinks that Bob Menendez has made a deal with Donald Trump to run and then siphon votes away from the Democrats and potentially put a Republican in the Senate in New Jersey. And that if Donald Trump then wins the White House in November, he would pardon Bob Menendez. And that theory actually kind of works for me today, because why else would he run as an independent to screw over the party that he grew up in and, you know, apparently still a Democrat today. So we'll have to watch it. First, he, of course, has to get through a trial that takes place long before the election. And a lot of people would tell you that he's not going to survive that trial. 5:12, the two biggest lottery games in America have a combined jackpot of $1.5 billion. So you have a lot of people dreaming big. These folks buying tickets in New Jersey for the Mega Millions and the Powerball.
We'll just enjoy a little bit more, travel a little bit more.
Hire a personal trainer and hire a personal chef.
Okay, the Mega Millions jackpot, $977 million. The drawing is tonight. The odds are 1 in 302 million. The Powerball jackpot has ballooned to $750 million.
They're buying so high, like 15, 20 tickets per person, so they're buying very high tickets.
Yeah, so some places, of course, they do these office pools where they buy like 500 tickets. Camille is playing the Mega Millions, and she feels like luck is on her side. She was waiting in line outside a lottery center in New Jersey.
But I have 2 millionaire winners in my family, so you always figure maybe it'll hit 3 times.
Yeah, wow, 2 in the family, 2 million. I had somebody that I worked with, and he won the lottery. This is about 20 years ago. He won like about $5 million, and he came into work the next day, and he bought everybody lunch. He bought lunch, the entire floor lunch. It was like 100 people. And then he told the boss that he was going home to the Philippines, where he was originally from, for 2 weeks of vacation, then he'd be back. And about halfway through that vacation, he sent a letter to the boss saying, I'm never coming back, because $3 million in the Philippines is like $100 million. So good for him. 513, a man is recovering well after receiving a kidney transplant from a pig.
Massachusetts surgeons are calling Rick Slayman a real hero for agreeing to try the groundbreaking operation this week. Slayman had a previously failed human kidney transplant and said he decided to go forward with the procedure because I saw it not only as a way to help me, but as a way to provide hope for thousands of people who need a transplant to survive. There is currently a massive shortage of human donor organs, and researchers hope that animal donors may help. The pig kidney that doctors used was genetically modified to reduce the risk of rejection. I'm Mark Mayfield.
That's pretty cool. 514, of course, we told you with the forecast at the beginning that it is going to be pretty bad tomorrow. Going to see some high winds, could get 2 to 3 inches of rain, and of course that'll lead to flooding in Bushwick out in Brooklyn. Some business owners there say just in the last couple of years has gotten really bad, especially along Knickerbocker Avenue. This guy owns a bakery, and he's been flooded out the last couple times there's been heavy rains, and he worries it'll be flooded out again tomorrow.
We have severe damage in the basement when it rains a lot. 1 year we had about 5 feet of water. We lost about $50,000 worth of product, and boilers, hot water tanks. It was a catastrophe.
And just a couple stores down, also on Knickerbocker Avenue in Bushwick, this guy who owns a store has taken everything off the floor in the basement because he says that gets flooded every time there's heavy rains.
We can't open the store. We have to clean everything, and we lost a lot of money.
All right, keep it here. 77 WABC for everything on the storm. I'll actually be with you tomorrow to get you through that storm, so make sure you tune in. All right, 515, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Friday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Happy Friday. Good morning to you as well, Noam Layden. We do start with our madness. The first round of the NCAA men's basketball tournament now off and running, and day one of all-day action did not disappoint one bit. The madness story for the local Wagner College was short-lived, with them falling against one-seed North Carolina by an expected final of 90-62. St. Peter's, the other tri-state area squad representing in the bracket, will also make a round one exit at the hands of a two-seed Tennessee, who handily took down the Peacocks by a score of 83-49. Notable outcomes of the day yesterday included 14-seed Oakland over 3-seed Kentucky, 80-76, thanks to 10 three-pointers from a one Jack Golke of Oakland. 11-seed Duquesne eliminated 6-seed BYU by a score of 71-67. 11-seed Oregon down 6-seed South Carolina, 87-73, thanks to a 40-piece from Oregon's Jermaine Cousinard. 11-seed NC State took down 6-seed Texas Tech, 80-67. And 9-seed Michigan State easily took care of 8-seed Mississippi State by a score of 69-51. Today, action picks right back up at 12:15 p.m. in the East region, with 9-seed Northwestern tipping off against 8-seed Florida Atlantic. FAU, their 3.5-point favorites. 1-seed UConn, their first-round matchup against 16-seed Stetson, is scheduled for a 2:45 p.m. tip today. UConn, their 26.5-point favorites, before 1-seed Purdue, 27.5-point favorite. taking on the 16 seed Grambling at 7:25 p.m. tonight in the Midwest region. And one seed Houston, their 23.5 point favorites against 16 seed Longwon. That tip is set for 9:20 p.m. tonight in the South region. In the NBA, the
how did your bracket hold up on the first day?
Actually, not terrible, to be honest with you. I had NC State, so that was a plus. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't pick St. Peter's or Wagner. I'll give you that.
Well, that was smart.
Well, yeah. What did you? Did you?
Mine was okay, too. You can actually look at both of ours if you head over to WABCRadio.com. You can see our brackets.
Oh, plug.
Held up.
Plug.
Yeah.
In the NBA, the Knicks dropped one in Denver last night to the Nuggets. Final score 113-100. Jalen Brunson scored 26 points, and Isaiah Hartenstein had 20 for the Knicks. His four-game winning streak came to a halt. Dante DiVincenzo knocked down 3 3-pointers to give him 219, which is the second most in a season in Knicks history.
What's going on over there? You having a stroke?
I had something in my eye? Is that where that was? No. Evan Fournier set the team record with 241 in 2021 and 2022. In Milwaukee, the Nets fell as well, 115-108 to the Bucks. Mikal Bridges scored 24. Nick Claxton had 22 and Cam Thomas 21. The Nets, I should say, lost their fifth straight. In the NHL, the Rangers victorious in Boston, handling the Bruins in impressive fashion by a score of 5-2. Artemi Panarin gave New York a 1-0 lead on a wrist shot he threaded through the legs of a Boston defender and goalie Jeremy Swayman. After the Bruins tied, Panarin got credit for his second goal after Boston's Jake DeBrusk had an own goal. And the Rangers stopped 24 shots. I should say Jonathan Quick, actually, in net stopped 24 shots to help the Rangers beat the NHL best Boston for the third time in as many tries this season. Out in Detroit, the Islanders got walloped 6-3 by the Red Wings. And finally, in Newark, the Devils looked more like last year's version of themselves, dominating the Winnipeg Jets 4-1 last night. That's your sports gnome, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 520. Vice President Kamala Harris. We're going to be in Parkland, Florida, tomorrow, touring the Marjorie Stoneham Douglas High School campus before the 1,200-student building is demolished.
It is an intact crime scene with the blood, the DNA, the glass, the schoolwork that was open for kids that is still sitting on desks.
On February 14th, 2018, the mass shooting at the campus by a 19-year-old former student of the school who was armed with a semi-automatic AR-15. He killed 17, wounded 17 more. Gun control activist Father Fred Gutenberg says he wants Harris to see how the design of the school played a role in making the 2018 massacre a whole lot worse.
To see how, in fact, the design of the school played a role in making it worse, because we've never really designed our schools to protect kids from gun violence. With the bulletproof glass, the recessed windows, the self-locking doors, all the things that were done to ensure even if a gunman gets in, the kids and the educators are protected.
521, let's go overseas. The U.S. pushing for a ceasefire agreement in the Israel-Hamas war. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, he was in Cairo yesterday with a proposal for a ceasefire that would include, of course, the release of the hostages held by Hamas in return for aid getting into Gaza.
The ceasefire that we're working on would be the best, most immediate way to enable us to surge humanitarian assistance.
Now, we've been here before with talk of the ceasefire. It did not happen. But he says Hamas has responded to this deal with the gaps in negotiation narrowing.
We agreed today, all of the ministers, that we would get our experts together in the coming days to identify the urgent, practical, and concrete steps that can and should be taken to increase the flow of assistance.
And the U.S. actually has submitted this draft resolution to the United Nations calling for the immediate ceasefire in Gaza that's tied to the release of the hostages held by Hamas. Correspondent Rafe Sanchez says this is a major development.
This is significant. As you said, the U.S. has previously vetoed 3 U.N. Security Council resolutions calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. It's now putting forward its own resolution calling for a ceasefire.
And Antony Blinken is actually in Israel today trying to get all sides in on this latest proposal. That is House Speaker Mike Johnson plans to invite Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address Congress now.
Johnson told CNBC's Squawk Box on Thursday he would love for the Prime Minister to address a joint session of Congress and will extend the invitation. The move comes amid fallout from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's speech criticizing the Israeli leader's handling of the war in Gaza and calling for new elections in Israel. Schumer, in a statement, said he would always welcome the opportunity for Netanyahu to speak to Congress in a bipartisan way. I'm Lisa Taylor.
Let's stay down in D.C. Republicans pressing the Senate now to pass the Laken-Riley Act.
Laken Riley should still be alive.
The reason that she is not alive is because of Joe Biden's open borders.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz there says, along with others in the GOP, support legislation that would require federal immigration officials to arrest, detain, and deport illegal immigrants who commit burglary or theft. It easily passed the House with bipartisan support, but Democrats control the Senate where it has stalled out.
Had Joe Biden simply followed the law, what would have happened is that murderer would have been put on a plane, flown back to Venezuela, and Lincoln Riley would still be alive. They put illegal aliens and criminals consistently higher on the priority list than protecting the lives of American citizens.
Doesn't look like this bill will go anywhere, though, in the Senate. 524, the head of the Social Security Administration, warning now against raising the retirement age.
Martin O'Malley spoke at a House committee hearing on Thursday where he said Americans want their government to strengthen Social Security and expand it, not to cut it, contract it, or gut its customer service. He added the government should be mindful of people who do hard work their whole lives and die sooner. His comments came one day after House Republicans released a budget proposal that would raise the age of Social Security eligibility to account for increases in life expectancy. I'm Mark Mayfield.
WABC News Time 524. Let's go out to California. The California State Attorney General says California is going to join this Department of Justice and 16 other states in filing an antitrust lawsuit against Apple now.
Our complaint is essentially four causes of action, all arising out of the allegation under federal antitrust law that Apple is engaged in monopolistic behavior.
So the suit accuses the tech giant of anti-competitive behavior related to iPhone hardware and software. They say that Apple conducts conduct stifles innovation. It limits consumer choice, and it makes switching to other smartphones really incredibly difficult.
Our job is to make sure that the market is free, that the laws are followed, that a entity like Apple, who has a $3+ trillion market cap, is not using that market power in a way that's unfair and unlawful.
So this lawsuit hopes that it'll get Apple to play by the rules and that it'll be a lesson for other giant tech companies. It was up and away from Cape Canaveral yesterday.
3, 2, 1, ignition, and liftoff at a Dragon 10 to Cape Canaveral.
Several tons of supplies on their way to the International Space Station from Cape Canaveral. A Falcon 9 rocket lifted off right on time yesterday afternoon, just before 5 p.m. The supplies are in the Dragon cargo capsule. They're now headed to the International Space Station.
Falcon 9 at 1.7 million pounds of thrust, pitching downrange, hearing good calls of performance. Nominal trajectory as Falcon 9 and Dragon arc out to the northeast.
And so far, all looks good as it makes its way to the International Space Station. 526, a man from Los Angeles is suing more than 50 women for unflattering comments they made about him in a Facebook dating group.
The man, Stuart Murray, is suing members of the Facebook group called Are We Dating the Same Guy for defamation, libel, invasion of privacy, sex-based discrimination, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. In their posts, members of the private group share dating advice and warn each other about men who may be dangerous. Murray says the women's false claims include saying he is suspected of murder, has had several domestic violence charges, tried to extort money from women he dated, and has sexually transmitted diseases. I'm Daniel Martindale.
Oh, my God. Okay, Billy Joel's 100th residency concert taking place next week at Madison Square Garden. And despite his $3 million salary per concert, the Hicksville native is staying true to his roots when it comes to getting to his shows from Long Island. He tells Newsday that he used to take a helicopter into the city, and who can blame him if you're getting $3 million a concert. But he says recently he started getting nervous about safety, so now he takes the LARRR. Can you imagine getting on the LIRR and there's Billy Joel? He says, yeah, some people have noticed and even come up to him and said, hey, you look like Billy Joel, but don't believe that he actually is Billy Joel. Right, let's take a look at the markets. The opening bell rings this morning after a higher close yesterday. Stocks boosted thanks to the Federal Reserve, indicating that three interest rate cuts are likely to come later this year. At the closing bell, the Dow gained 269 points. S&P 500 rose by 16. The NASDAQ gained 32 points.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 533. Good morning. It is Friday, March 22nd. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. It's going to start off the weekend nice. Sunshine today. It's going to be cool. High 44. And then tomorrow it's just going to be a mess. We'll see a lot of rain, 2 to 3 inches before the storm moves out. A lot of that rain will be in the afternoon. And then Sunday better. Sun and clouds, high 48. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it is 26 and clear in Pomona up in Rockland County, 25 and clear in Hightstown down in New Jersey, and it is 28 and clear outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour right near our studios in Kips Bay. The story of this woman who was found in a duffel bag. We told you about this last Friday. The woman's body, her name is Nadia Vitels. Her body was found in a duffel bag in her mother's apartment on East 31st Street after her family members knew that she was going to visit this apartment that her mother once owned, and they hadn't heard from her for a while. So the family showed up at the building last Thursday night, and they asked the super of the building to let them into the apartment. And they searched through the apartment, and they saw that things were, you know, sort of strewn all over the place, but they could not find her. And then, unfortunately, her son opened up the closet door of one of inside this apartment, and inside they found her body in a duffel bag. And so that's when the mystery and, of course, the horror started. And now what they have figured out was that there were two squatters that were living in her apartment. And when she showed up, she hadn't been to this apartment in 3 or 4 months. She had flown in from Spain to stay at the apartment. And when she opened the door, she found these two people inside. They immediately went after her, apparently threw her body against a sheetrock wall. They punched her. They beat her. And then they raced away from the apartment in her car. And so far, they have not found up but with these creeps, with these murderers. That is family members, you know, of course, just devastated by this news.
I was shocked to find out from the detectives that they had been there since Sunday.
Yeah, so that's a neighbor who said he had heard commotion in the apartment, but didn't think much about it. He just thought that maybe they had decided to give the apartment to friends. But apparently these two, a man and a woman, were living in the apartment as squatters for 4 months. And what also seems strange is it's one of these buildings where the elevator opens up into your apartment, so you need a special key. So they can't figure out how this couple were able to get a hold of this special key. They have not found them yet. They took the car, drove across the George Washington Bridge, who actually stopped in Pennsylvania this week after they got into a car accident. But for whatever reason, the police didn't connect them to this crime.
I'm wondering how they knew, you know, about this apartment.
How they picked it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like they were just trying out other apartments. Right. Seems like they just went straight up to the 19th floor.
And there's a possibility they think that they were trying to use her credit cards, to Nadia's credit cards, to buy a car at a dealership. They were turned down a couple of times, so there's pictures of them. They know there's someone either in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, and it's just a matter of time, of course, they catch up with these two. But awful, awful story. Now we know what happened to Nadia Vitel. And in a moment, we're going to tell you about another mystery solved, this in the case of a seamstress who went missing in Flushing, Queens. WA News Time, 5:38. A seamstress in Flushing, Queens. Her name is Xiping Shen. Well known. She was one of these people who worked, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year, had this tiny little shop tucked away in Flushing, but everybody seemed to know about her as being this great seamstress. They would bring their clothes to her. Well, she vanished back in November, and she was the only one who worked in this little shop. So the lights are still on in the shop, like a drink that she had been sipping on is still inside the store. And it took a little while for people to catch on that, wait, something has happened to her. She's gone missing.
She's famous for her job. People say, you know, a year, 365 days,
She's been working 364 days.
Shen's family is all in China.
Yeah, so Shen's family, as he says, all in China. They hadn't been able to reach her for 2 months. So they contacted the one friend that they knew she had there. And she started trying to figure out what happened to Shen. At first, they were able to figure out that at some point she was at New York Presbyterian Queens Hospital.
The doctor told me about her situation there. And doctor said she'd be okay. Maybe next week she will discharge. It cannot tell us anything because we are not the emergency contact, the person.
Yeah, so here was the problem. She had no family members, so they would not give her, you know, there's those HIPAA laws. They wouldn't give anybody the details of what exactly happened to her, but they were able to get out of this doctor that she had been discharged to a center where they could take care of her. And then the family, of course, was like, well, where is she? You know, the family back in China, they can't reach her. So they reach out to State Assembly member Ron Kim, who is able to convince the hospital to speak on the family's behalf back in China. And they tell him that she's been discharged to a nursing home. So now they race to the nursing home to figure out where she is. The nursing home, you know, hesitant to give out any information about her. But then when they realize it's the family in China reaching out, they tell her that she actually passed away back in January. So now Kim has to call the family back home and tell them what happened, that this mystery is solved, but it did not end the way they would have wanted to.
Kidney failure.
Just when we called them, it was at that time period when they were about to dispose the remains at a public cemetery. We were able to intervene, and through Harriet and her people, remove the remains to a local funeral home, as our office is arranging or expediting the visas for her families from abroad to come here to have a proper funeral and then take the remains back home to China.
Yeah, so sad. I mean, essentially, she died alone. Nobody seemed to know that she was sick. And, of course, when they all found out, it was too late. She had already passed away. NYPD chiefs were out riding the rails all day yesterday in this sweeping initiative to hear concerns about subway safety directly from strap hangers. So every subway line yesterday had multiple ranking, high ranking NYPD chiefs riding during the day in this initiative called Chiefs on the Train. The top department executive said they wanted to talk to riders to hear their concerns from themselves.
The D-line needs more attention for sure. That's why I didn't feel safe.
I'm always thinking somebody's going to get upset because I'm, you know, going next to a crazy person. They're going to push me over the side in my wheelchair. And, you know, I'm defenseless against that.
And what these chiefs heard, and you won't be surprised to hear this, is that riders feel completely unsafe. Even though the stats don't necessarily match what's going on in the subways, that crime is not as bad as it once was, riders feel incredibly unsafe.
Well, I've definitely seen a turnaround. With the deployment, extra cops, flooding the stations with more manpower, it's definitely been a game changer.
I would say I would want to see more cops on the train based on what I saw from the platform and what I've seen in the train station.
Yes, so the chiefs who did ride the trains yesterday said, yeah, there were plenty of cops on the platform, it seemed, but not enough on the trains. That was one of the takeaways as they go back to the departments and come up with a strategy to keep people safe.
That New York City is doing as much as possible that they can do for right now, but they could do more. You could always do more.
I do feel like they need to have more security, more safety procedures done in order to keep us safe, because at the end of the day, we're risking our lives out here also.
Yeah, so as you probably know, the governor last week started flooding this transit system with state police and with National Guard members, all in a bid to make people feel safe down below. And, well, let me knock on some wood here. There hasn't been any high-profile crimes in the last couple of days. On average, by the way, the NYPD says there's about 6 relatively serious crimes on the subway every single day. But you have to remember there's about 4 million riders every single day. When you think of it that way, that's not too terrible. But, of course, for riders, at least as of late, they are riding the trains a little frightened. Out to New Jersey, 2 former students suing the Fort Lee School District Board of Education over alleged sex abuse by the teacher. The suit stems from incidents in 2012 and 2017 involving a special education math teacher at the Lewis Cole Middle School.
Touching her body inappropriately, including her chest,
her back, shoulder, and waist.
Jeffrey Fritz there, the ex-student's lawyer, says one girl was 12 years old at the time, the other 13. He claims that neither the Fort Lee School District nor the Board of Ed reported the alleged sex abuse to the state of New Jersey as required by law.
I urge the Fort Lee Board of Education to care about their students' safety and follow proper procedures rather than protecting their abusers and their reputation.
Yeah, so this teacher in question here retired back in 2018. She was stripped of her teaching license. The plaintiffs, who are now 19 and 20 years old, say they had to come forward so that nobody else, they say, was abused in the way that they were abused. All right, 5:45. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Ellis.
Yes, you have found me here.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
5:45, indeed. The first round of the NCAA men's basketball tournament now off and running, and day one of all-day action did not disappoint one bit. The March Madness story for the local Wagner College was short-lived, with them falling against one-seed North Carolina by a pretty much expected, I should say, final of 90-62. St. Peter's, the other tri-state area squad representing in the bracket, will also make a round one exit at the hands of two-seed Tennessee, who handily took down the Peacocks by a score of 83-49. Notable outcomes of the day included 14-seed Oakland over 3-seed Kentucky, 80-76, thanks to 10 three-pointers from Jack Golke of Oakland. 11-seed Duquesne eliminated 6-seed BYU by a score of 71-67. 11-seed Oregon down 6-seed South Carolina, 87-73, thanks to a 40-piece from Oregon's Jermaine Cousinard. 11-seed NC State took down 6-seed Texas Tech, 80-67, and 9-seed Michigan State easily took care of 8-seed Mississippi State by a score of 69-51. Today, action picks right back up at 12:15 p.m. in the East region, with 9-seed Northwestern tipping off against 8-seed Florida Atlantic. FAU there, 3.5-point favorites. 1-seed UConn, their first round matchup against 16-seed Stetson, is scheduled for a 2:45 p.m. tip today. UConn there, 26.5-point favorites, before 1-seed Purdue, 27.5-point favorites, taking on 16-seed Grambling at 7:25 p.m. tonight in the Midwest region, and 1-seed Houston, 23.5-point favorites, tipping off with 16-seed Longwood at 9:20 p.m. tonight in the South region. In the NBA, the Knicks dropped one in Denver last night to the Nuggets. Final score 113-100. And out in Milwaukee, the Nets fell as well, 115-108 to the Bucks. In the NHL, the Rangers were victorious in Boston, handing the Bruins an impressive 5-2 loss. A win for the Rangers, of course. Artemi Panarin gave New York that 1-0 lead on a wrist shot he threaded through the legs of a Boston defender and goalie Jeremy Swayman. After the Bruins tied it, Panarin got credit for his second goal when Boston's Jake DeBrusk scored an only goal. Jonathan Quick in net stopped 24 shots to help the Rangers beat NHL best Boston for the third time in as many tries this season. Out in Detroit, the Islanders got walloped 6-3 by the Red Wings. Riley, Jean-Gabriel Pageau, and Matthew Barzal scored for New York. Ilya Sorokin made 18 saves. And finally, out in Newark, the Devils looked more like last year's version of themselves, dominating the Winnipeg Jets 4-1 last night. That's Sports Gnome, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the morning. This notorious slumlord, considered the worst slumlord in New York City, turned himself in to city sheriffs yesterday to begin this 2-month jail sentence after blowing off a judge's orders to correct just a raft of hazards at two upper Manhattan buildings that he owns. This is Daniel Oheb Shalom, was found in contempt of court earlier this month for failing to fix hundreds of alleged violations, both Washington Heights buildings that he owns, where tenants have faced crumbling ceilings. In this case, this woman said a ceiling fell on top of her kid.
Suddenly I heard him scream, and when I went into the room, the ceiling had collapsed over him. And thankfully, you know, it wasn't a major injury, but I mean, it hit his head.
Yeah, so a spokesman for the sheriff says Oheb Shalom, who lives in California, actually turned himself into the sheriff's office in Manhattan yesterday about 3 o'clock. Now, it's not clear if he's behind bars yet. We couldn't get confirmation on that. But he is set to serve this 60-day sentence at Rikers. And some tenants who live in his buildings say, yeah, it's about time that he go to jail.
They would withdraw the rent straight out of our bank account every month. But then we get no heat for 5 days every week. 3 days with heat, the rest of the time no heat, no hot water. You need to pay for what you did. So you can't keep the building. Give it to us.
So here's the part that's not completely clear. If they'll serve the entire day, 60-day sentence, and whether it'll be 100% at Rikers, we couldn't get confirmation of that. But what we did get confirmation was, is that if he agrees to and begins to fix some of the violations, and there's just hundreds of them, he may get out of jail early. So, of course, we'll follow that story. Changes are coming that will impact flights now at Newark.
The FAA says beginning in June, control of Newark airspace will shift from New York to Philadelphia. According to the FAA, this will improve staffing and help meet traffic demand in the busy Northeast Corridor. New York controllers currently oversee air traffic from Newark, Kennedy, LaGuardia, Teterboro, and MacArthur airports. I'm Bob Brown for 77 WABC News.
Senator Bob Menendez trying to maybe screw it up for the Democrats come the Senate election this fall. He announced yesterday that if he survives his trial for bribery, that he will run as an independent Democrat. Here he is.
I will not file for the Democratic primary this June. I am hopeful that my exoneration will take place this summer and allow me to pursue my candidacy as an independent Democrat in the general election. This would allow me the time to not only remind New Jerseyans of how I've succeeded in being your champion, but how we will secure our financial futures.
So, of course, he made himself in the Democratic Party in Hudson County. He'd been senator for a long time, since 2006 now. Of course, the question is now, is he purposely running as an independent to siphon votes away from Democrats? That would put probably a Republican in that Senate seat, at least a good shot of it anyway. The Republicans have not held on to a Senate seat in New Jersey since the 1970s. Now, this all only happens if he survives a trial that begins in May. Prosecutors say the senator conspired with his wife and another person to act as an agent of Egypt in exchange for bribe payments. You probably saw some of this. Prosecutors say they found gold bars and hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash in Menendez's closet in his home in New Jersey. Speaking of a lot of money, two biggest lottery games in America have a combined jackpot today of more than $1.5 billion. So people are out buying both the Mega Millions, the Powerball tickets today.
We'll just enjoy a little bit more, travel a little bit more.
Hire a personal trainer and hire a personal chef.
This guy owns a ticket machine inside his bodega in Hoboken.
They're buying so high, like 15, 20 tickets per person, so they're buying very high tickets.
Yeah, so a lot of people, you know, thinking more tickets, the better chance you have. The odds, of course, are just outrageous. The odds of winning are 1 in 302 million. So as you've probably heard before, you're more likely to be hit by lightning. But Camille says, hey, someone's got to win.
But I have two millionaire winners in my family. So you always figure maybe it'll hit three times.
Yeah. Big story this weekend come Saturday is all the rain we're going to get. All day Saturday, most of it will probably fall in the afternoon hours, but it could start in the morning hours. There are 2 to 3 inches of rain. So places that normally flood will definitely flood tomorrow, like the Bronx River Parkway. But with 2 to 3 inches of rain, you'll get places that don't normally flood. Out on Knickerbocker Avenue in Bushwick in Brooklyn, it wasn't a place where things used to flood, but recently it has become that. And here's the owner of a bakery who says this could be a nightmare for him tomorrow. He's just cleaning up from the last flood.
We have severe damage in the basement when it rains a lot. One year we had about 5 feet of water. We lost about $50,000 worth of product. And boilers, hot water tanks. It was a catastrophe.
Just a couple stores down from him, this guy owns a store as well. And what he's been doing over the last 24 hours, grabbing everything out of the basement because he says he knows it'll flood there and he wants to protect his inventory.
We can't open the store. We had to clean everything and we lost a lot of money.
Yeah, so keep it here. I'll be with you tomorrow morning to get you through this storm. 77 WABC, again, 2 to 3 inches of rain will likely start late morning into the afternoon, depending on where you're listening to us. New Jersey will get it hit earlier, New York a little bit later, but we'll watch the storm all day long, 77 WABC. The NYPD alerting you of these multiple scams that police are seeing. One scam involves teenagers asking for donations for their sports teams. I see this one all the time.
So as that victim is trying to donate $5 to their local basketball team,
the perpetrators wind up taking the victim's phone and adding a few more zeros.
Yeah, so police say the jewelry scam, that's increasing, where a person in a vehicle calls an elderly person over with some sweet talk, convinces the victim to give him or her a hug before the scammer takes their jewelry. And police say you'd be surprised how many people fall for that one.
When the cashier uses this.
So, and then police also seeing scammers put their own barcodes on the back of gift cards in stores. And then when the card is purchased, the cashier transfers the money to the scammer's account instead of the card. So you think you're buying a gift card for someone else, but you're actually buying a gift card apparently for the cashier. And you'd be surprised how often this one happens.
When the cashier uses the scan gun, it actually transfers that money to the perpetrator's account.
Yeah, so that one, there's not a whole lot you can do about it except go to stores where the people and the workers are more reliable, maybe the big brand stores instead of maybe your local bodega to buy one of these gift cards.